Hey fam, welcome back to Real Talk with Caleb. Y'all know the deal. We keep it real around here. And today, I've got a special guest in the house. All my guests are special, but this young lady has such great information that I said, hey, we got to get her on the show. We got to get her to share this information. I did one with one of my Air Force sisters a couple weeks back. We talked a little bit about trauma and how people live in trauma. Miss Jen saw a post and I commented or something on her post on Facebook. We're connected on social media. And she said, there was a dialogue that started and she's working on her doctorate. We're going to name it and claim it. This is Dr. Van Pelt we got on here because she's right around the corner from finishing her doctoral. And I tell you what, she specializes in trauma, especially as it deals, I guess I should say specifically with trauma with military families. And so anyway, I reached out, I was like, hey, would you mind coming on and just talking? Because I think there's so much that people can benefit from your knowledge and your experience and the work that you do. So anyway, Jen, welcome to Real Talk with Caleb. As we say, sometimes the truth is messy, but we got to discuss it anyway, because we know at the end it helps people. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today?
Thanks. Yeah, I'm doing well. I'm doing well. I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? I know I sort of started us off with a little bit of a, peek behind the scenes about what you're working on becoming a doctor, Ed. But tell us a little bit about what you want us to know about you and who you are and where you come from and whatever else you want us to know about you.
Sure. So obviously I'm Jen. I am a licensed professional counselor. I've been in this field since 2014, doing some stepping stones to get kind of where I am now. I always knew that I wanted to work on my doctorate eventually. It took me a while to kind of decide what area I wanted to focus on, but I knew that trauma was going to be my passion and my specialty. And so I decided to focus on getting my PhD in developmental psychology. I'm starting my third year actually this month. I just hit my two year mark, and I'm hopefully going to graduate in May of next year. So all of my research has been really focused on trauma and how it affects the brain. I've worked a lot with clients, children and adults, who have, dealt with childhood trauma, and I see how it has affected their functioning. And so it's really just my passion. I want to, write. I want to help the people in that community. And I have a heart for military. Obviously, I'm a veteran, and my husband is still active duty. So I'm a military spouse, and I have gotten to know very intimately the ins and outs of being a spouse and what that looks like and how difficult that can be on its own. Yeah. And so my dissertation focus is actually on how, the impact of childhood trauma on functioning in the military marriage, basically, communication, conflict resolution, and just overall marital satisfaction in an already difficult setting, I guess.
Yeah, that's amazing, Jen. I am so thankful that you accepted our request to come on the show and chat and just share your wisdom with us, and I'm not placating you at all. Like, there's so many different things that so many different people are talented at or skilled at. And if you need a door kicked in somewhere and a couple of triggers squeezed, then I'm your guy. Like, I can go do that. Thanks. But, dealing with trauma and helping people understand that is, I know it's important, yeah. But I'm not skilled in that. Right. So having you on here, and not saying you can't kick a door in either. I know you said you're a veteran, so you could probably kick a door in too if need be, and then help them with the trauma that you caused. But on a serious note, I don't want to broad brush the United States Air Force, but that's what I've spent the last 21 years doing and serving our nation through the Air Force. And I will tell you that I've come across a lot of people. I don't want to put a number on it, but a lot of people that when you really sit down and think about it are dealing with trauma. I think the military, especially in regards to the enlisted force, I won't say we recruit people that have experienced trauma, but I think there is something to be said about how many people that come into the military, and I'm sure there's other professions, right, that have people with trauma, especially in the public service arena, if you will, firefighters, paramedics, and law enforcement officers. I'm sure they have similar things that we deal with in the military, even from the spouse's aspect, as you brought up. So I'm not saying that we're unique, more so than anybody else, but that's what I have the experience in the profession of arms is definitely something unique that has in my experience, people that have dealt with trauma. So I know when I originally reached out to you and we were chit-chatting back and forth, there was a couple of areas, and I wanted to just let the audience know kind of what we're going to be talking about today. And then I know you'll kind of do sort of a deep dive within that. And I really request anybody that's listening to Real Talk right now to just lean in and listen, right, with open ears, but open heart as well, because we're going to discuss how childhood scars continue to affect us and include the how and the why. So Jen, get a little bit into that, if you don't mind, and then how to recognize when we need help and what we can do to begin the healing. And that's a we could probably spend a little bit of time on that, if you don't mind, Jen, because I think that's where a lot of our people are. Then we're speaking specifically, more so, I shouldn't say specifically, but more so to the Air Force audience on this podcast. But anybody's welcome to listen, but that's what we're talking to today. And then the third one is living life after healing and what that really looks like. I think there's some misconceptions out there, and I think it's with good hearts and good intentions, but I think people that aren't skilled, they're not licensed like you, maybe give some false hope or maybe not the right information when it comes to healing and what that really looks like. So without further ado, Jen, enough chit-chat out of me running my mouth. Well, what are childhood scars and how they continue to affect us, I guess? Talk to us a little bit about that and what we should be aware of.
Sure. Well, I always like to start out with kind of like the neurological impact that childhood trauma has on the brain. I think that is the most basic place to start, because from there, we have all of the other things that stem from that. But what a lot of people don't realize is that when you're exposed to, you know, whether it's neglect or abuse, all different types of abuse, your brain, you know, is in the amygdala. The amygdala is the part of your brain that's responsible for, you know, feeling, fight or flight, the stress response. And your stress response is really just an overdrive when you're in an environment like that. And that affects the development of the brain. So obviously when you're young, you have these periods of growth where your brain is just doing this exponential, you know, growing, and neurons are supposed to be firing in different areas. And the prefrontal cortex, which is the part of your brain that's responsible for judgment, decision-making, and complex thought processes, emotion regulation, things like that. When a child is in a healthy environment, that part of the brain, those positive neurons are firing, they're learning those things in accordance with their developmental stage, like they should be. But when a child is in an unhealthy environment and an unpredictable environment, they're spending much more time in the amygdala in the stress response. And that means that they're going to be a little underdeveloped when it comes to those areas of, you know, complex brain activity, you know, when it comes to being able to deal with our emotions in a healthy way and things like that. Now, if you remove the child from the situation, those positive neurons start firing, those things can develop. That's the beauty of the brain. There's something called neuroplasticity. Your brain can change, you know, even if it's, you know, you have some damage done when you're in the stress response for too long when you're younger. You can compensate for that, basically, you know, as you grow and start working on, you know, being in a healthy environment and learning how to regulate your emotions and things like that. And so that's kind of where I focus a lot on as a therapist, is, you know, pointing to that neuroplasticity, because while you're in the stress response, what happens is you start building these maladaptive neural pathways. And I like to, I'm country, I'm from Alabama, so I like to tell people this. I like to tell people it's like a, you know, if you've ever been in a cow pasture, you notice that there's like a well-worn path. For some reason, the cows always take the same path. I don't know why, but yeah, they do. And it's like that in your brain. So, you know, if you're constantly living in fight or flight, your brain, when it's triggered by a stimulus that you perceive as threatening somehow, you're going to automatically go down this pathway, right? And this pathway sometimes can lead to, you know, you develop some negative beliefs maybe about yourself and about others, about the world. People are not trustworthy. I'm not worthy of love. Everyone I love is going to leave, you know, things like that are some pretty common ones that you tend to see.
Yeah.
But when that stimulus happens and it triggers it, you end up going down that negative maladaptive pathway, and this becomes your go-to. And so even as you start to develop the prefrontal cortex, you know, let's say you grow up, you're out of that environment, you've done some healing, you've been working on it, you still may have the tendency to go down that negative pathway. And so a lot of the focus that I have is okay, well, let's figure out what that negative belief is that you're you know, going down that pathway on. And, you know, how does that keep getting perpetuated so that we can start to build a new pathway? Because that's possible. Once you start realizing, hey, I'm in stress response mode, I'm, you know, triggered by this specific thing that makes me feel, and it triggers that belief inside of me, I go down this negative pathway. But you can stop yourself before you go down the pathway, and you can start building a new one. And so just like if the cows decided to take a different path, the old one would start to grow up, the grass would grow back, and you would now have a new pathway. And so whenever that stimulus triggers your brain, you're going to automatically go down the new one. It takes practice and it takes a lot of work, but you can do it. And so I feel like those are the things that, you know, you kind of see those negative beliefs that you develop in childhood when you're in those environments. Those are like a lens that you see the world through, but it's like a cracked lens. You know what I mean? Mm. So everything you look around, relationships, the interactions in your relationships, the communication that you're receiving, it can all be perceived through this cracked lens, which can cause more issues in your relationships with other people. And so I think that's what people don't realize, is that these childhood scars continue to affect the way that we see others, the way we see ourselves, in ways that may be very, you know, quiet. They may not be so overt. They may not be things that you notice as much unless you've kind of started to do some self-evaluation and, you know, maybe I'm perceiving this wrong. Maybe I'm not, you know, seeing this in an accurate way, because we don't realize that that's our go-to and that that's a protective mechanism that our brains have developed after being in a threatening environment.
That's amazing. I think there's some key things. One, I think is what you mentioned. I love the cow path analogy. I'm a Southern boy too, so from Mississippi. And I think even if you're not from the South, you can appreciate that analogy. And that really makes sense. I've never heard it described that way. And it's probably makes the most sense to me out of any of description I've heard relating to trauma. So, but when I hear you talk, Jen, I hear you say things that are like, hey, education, maturity, and discipline are like key factors that I'm picking up from what you're saying. First, I need to know that, hey, there is such a thing as trauma. Here's what trauma does. So what you just did within, I don't know, I don't want to watch him watch 3 minutes. If my goodness, if I could implant that, take that, bottle it up and produce it out to the Air Force, that would go a long way to just helping people understand. There are so many people, you could be like really awesome at your job, right? You could even be have high rank, more stripes and stars and bars and everything else, and never have heard this, right? So there's an element of education to it. Once you've been educated, it's having the maturity, like you talk about doing introspection, right? Of like, hey, what path am I actually on right now? You know, I've heard people like Jen, maybe they heard Jen say, hey, I'm on the normal cow path here. I know that's what that's going to result in. So it takes some maturity, but discipline to continue to do that.
Yep.
Something else that I thought about when you were talking, Jen, was the length of time. I tell people a lot, like, hey, we have airmen have 18 to 25 years, roughly on average, of life before they come to the United States Air Force. And you could just apply that to any other field as well. You know, the adult workforce, if you will. And we think some of us think maybe a few weeks or a few months completely transforms this person's life, and now they see the core values just like everybody else does for that's been in for 20 plus years or whatever. And that's just not simply that's not the case. So when I thought and I'm thinking about telling people that, and I'm hearing you talk about, you know, being in these traumatic situations or experienced trauma, is there, and not, I know it's not exact more than likely, but is there like a point where like, hey, X amount of years of experiencing trauma, is it like, is there ever irreversible type of, I guess you could say, neurological type of damage or scarring? Can you talk us a little bit about like, hey, how, I know, and I don't want to put us in a box to say, you know, I would hate for anybody to be listening, but like, well, I experienced trauma for 22 years and you're saying I can't be helped. I'm not saying that at all. And I'm not trying to lead us down that path, but just kind of trying to understand it better. Is it, you know, like when you do muscle training, right? You know, working out, it might take me 10 years, but then that muscle finally starts responding the way I want. I see the development I want. Is it the negative piece of that from a trauma standpoint? Is there anything, any studies been done in your line of work that says, hey, we see typically kids that have children that have experienced X amount of years of trauma, they have more severe or adverse. Is there anything like that?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you were to look at the numbers, like statistically, the longer you're in a maladaptive environment, like, yeah, absolutely. It's going to be probably a more profound effect than it would be on someone who's just experienced for a short period of time. That doesn't mean that it's any less impactful to go through trauma. Trauma is trauma, just like you said. Yeah. But yes, if you've been in an environment your entire life from like birth until you move out and join the military, like there's going to be quite significant of an impact that trauma has made on you. And what that really means is that, you know, you still can make changes. You still can become, you know, self-aware. You still can realize, okay, I need to heal because this is not what the world is supposed to look like. This is not like the lens that I'm seeing things through is broken because I was raised in a broken environment. You know, I wasn't that attachment, you know, and I don't want to go too far into this because I'm very passionate about it and I can talk way too much about it. But that attachment with your primary caregivers, that shapes so much just in and of itself. If you don't receive the basic needs that every child has for safety, security, and love, that's going to impact your ability to attach in relationships later on down the road. So you may be avoidant. You may push people away. You may look at people as not being trustworthy, kind of like we mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. Or you may become very anxious and are constantly worried people are going to leave. So you're very clingy and you're, you know, things like that. And so sometimes those are more profound when it's been a longer period of time that you've been exposed to that kind of environment and not ever having like a caregiver that's even maybe not even a parent. You know, some people have grandparents that step in. Some people have step parents that step in and become that for them. But anyway, you can still grow. You can still become aware. And like I said, I really feel like I know I keep talking about self-awareness, but that's really the key. Because you're going to carry with you some soft spots. That's why we call them scars. You're going to have some scars. Even when you have healed, you've done the work you need to do. Healing is lifelong when it comes to trauma. There's no point where you're like, I've arrived. I'm completely over it. Everything is sunshine and rainbows from here on out. Like you're still going to have a tendency to be triggered by certain things. But when you become aware of it, then you can stop yourself from spiraling. You can stop yourself from, you can recognize, hey, this is a broken lens. I'm seeing this through. So I need to reevaluate. I need to take some time and step away from the situation and really try to figure out what I'm looking at here from a you know, wise perspective rather than where my emotions would take me initially.
Absolutely. You know, a lot of what I've experienced, even myself, to be honest with you, Jen, in a transparent moment here, but also across other people that I've come across in my experiences in the Air Force, the flight or fight mode that you talked about on that path, if you will, I think the majority, especially for myself, it was always the fight. I've got a lot of scarring, emotional scarring and physical scarring from my upbringing. So when you first started chatting, the first 3 minutes of this, I'll just be very honest with you, Jen, it was like I was getting counseled by you. Like that was some therapy for me because there was things that I'm hearing and I know the audience will hear, potentially hear that, you know, people that it maybe it's a light bulb moment for them because I was a fight all the time. There was no flight. Yeah. I had the stuff that I went through caused a lot of where you used to talk about it, you know, not being trustworthy. I wouldn't trust anybody. I don't care how good you acted like you were. I just didn't trust you. I was always looking for, so that cracked windshield you're talking about, I was always looking for the bad. I expected it. I was prepared for it. And I wanted to see it before you showed it so I could get the jump on you kind of thing. So a lot of our people come from a lot of backgrounds. The people that have trauma in their life come from backgrounds. And again, probably just the career fields that I've been in my time that drew more people that had the fight mode, necessarily more so than the flight mode. But there is so much truth and you talk about in there. And the one thing that you talked about too, about having looking through the world through a cracked lens. And we think that's normal. I thought it was normal for years, Jen, until I had to get help for some PTSD type of things in my life, coming back from a couple of deployments that weren't good. And Amy saying, hey, you know, you're not the same person. You're not the same person I married. And it wasn't from like a, you know, hey, you've changed so much and you know, you're not loving me anymore. Wasn't that at all. It was, I was a different person.
Yeah.
And that forced me to start talking to a pastor and get some counseling that way. And I realized that my windshield was cracked. My lens mm-hmm. was cracked. But it took somebody pouring into me. Like, I'm sitting here listening to you and I'm thinking about what your husband does in the Air Force, at least right now before he goes on back to his career field. I don't know how many airmen would benefit from hearing it from your perspective. So I'm definitely going to bottle this up from the podcast perspective and definitely share it as much as possible. Because there's something else that we want to talk about in the second main point is how to be. You talked about it a couple of times now about being self-aware. And I'm not making light of what you're saying, Jen. That's easy to say. And I know you're the licensed professional here, but we can say that all the time, right? About be self-aware. Yeah. What does that mean? What does that look like? Walk us through that of like some real practical steps that our people can use to kind of like evaluate themselves and like, hey, Jen's saying this, and maybe give them something more practical, you know, some deeper dive in that statement, if you will, if you can walk us through that.
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, just to kind of piggyback on something that you were just talking about, how you were looking for things to confirm, this kind of goes into this as well, the second point. But there's something called confirmation bias. And I think that that's part of being self-aware is realizing that your brain has a tendency to look for and be biased towards information that confirms what it is looking to confirm, right? So if you have negative beliefs about yourself or negative beliefs about other people, your brain is going to lean toward any kind of information that can be interpreted in a way that's going to confirm that bias. And so that's part of self-awareness right there in and of itself is realizing, do I have this bias? Like, is this a belief that I'm holding deep down inside? You know, I like to talk about how this is a really interesting analogy that one of my amazing supervisors told me a long time ago, and I've used it ever since. But she talks about how trauma is like when you have a wound that gets infected, right? You know what infection can do to your body. You know, it can spread through your bloodstream. I mean, it can even kill you, right? Like that's how bad infection can get if you don't deal with it. So going to therapy and dealing with your trauma or facing it head on with, you know, counseling on some level, you know, that's like the first step. And it's painful. And that's what you have to realize when you're going into it. People don't want to do it because it doesn't feel good. You know, it's like, if you think about that open wound, you've got to scrape out all that infection. And that is super painful business. That does not feel good. However, once you've done it, you heal up. And all of a sudden now you feel a lot better. Your body doesn't feel sick anymore. Your mind is not sick anymore on that level. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's just analogy. I mean, but anyway, I like to talk about it like that, you know, realizing, hey, I've got to do this dirty work of going through this and trying to evaluate. I know I have this trauma. I know I'm having issues with my relationships. You know, those are sometimes the things that you start to notice. I'm fighting a lot in my marriage, or I have a hard time committing in relationships. You know, I have a hard time seeing good in people. I feel, you know, usually pretty negative about life in general. You know, sometimes those can be kind of red flags that pop up. Okay, well, why do I feel so miserable? Why do I feel like this? It could be that you've got that infection going on. You know, it could be if you know you have some kind of childhood trauma you've experienced or you didn't have. And when I say trauma too, let me just say this. Some people think trauma and they think it's got to be this insane, like I was beaten to death, like, you know, like within an inch of my life. It's not always that overt. And sometimes the work that I do with people is helping them realize that what happened was not okay, that it was traumatic for them, even if it didn't seem that way at the time. So I guess the best thing I could say is when you notice that there's something that's just not working in your life, or you're feeling like, I can't communicate with this person, this, you know, this conflict is just, I cannot deal with conflict, I want to avoid it, or I get too angry and I'm in fight mode all the time and it's causing problems in my marriage, or whatever that happens to look like. Sometimes that's kind of a sign like, okay, I need some relief. Something is hurting and I need to figure out how I can get some relief from that. So, you know, really it has to do with your interactions with other people, you know, with the world around you. How are you existing? How do you feel about your relationships and about how they're going? And the self-awareness really comes from, part of it really is acknowledging, hey, that experience I had was traumatic. You know, my parents didn't show me the love that I needed, or they weren't able to keep me safe. I didn't have that feeling of safety and security when I was a child, and that has impacted me. And it's okay to acknowledge that. That's where it really starts, is acknowledging, first of all, there's something wrong. Second of all, when you know you've got childhood trauma, or you know you've had some childhood stuff happen that may be kind of sketchy, being able to recognize it for what it was. This was a traumatic impact on my life, you know, this thing that happened. Whether or not anybody else has recognized that or not, you know, it definitely could be. That wasn't right. That hurt. And I have clients that are still saying, you know, I'm still going through the process of realizing things that were not okay, you know, and that's how they look at it. It just was things that weren't okay. So if trauma, the word itself, is scary for people, or it feels like it's not accurate, or they don't want to use it, you know, simply realizing, hey, there were things that just weren't right. There were things that were not okay, and they hurt, and those things caused damage.
Yeah, that's a critical point. You know, we see that a lot. I shouldn't say a lot. I've seen that before when it comes to like PTSD, right? You know, we all process things so differently. One example, this last deployment I was on, I don't know if you or I'm sure some of the audience listening will know what the difference between incoming and outgoing, but I don't know if you've ever been close to a howitzer when it goes off, but a howitzer is extremely loud. It will shake the earth around it, right? So when you receive incoming, you know, typically on a FOB or a COB or whatever, you know, they'll triangulate and blah, 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 and they'll figure all this stuff out, and they'll start returning fire. Well, there was a young person, I say young, junior in rank, doesn't matter the age, but junior in rank, was at our location, hadn't been assigned our location, just happened to be traveling through as an assist. They were coming from another non-combat location to that location. And anyway, we took some incoming. The incoming was relatively quiet, just a couple of rockets. And I say it like it's nothing. There's probably a lot more to it than that. But that's probably another sign for a counselor listening to me say that. It's probably a lot of other signs, warning signs going up in your head. It's like, oh, it's normal, Jen. That happens all the time.
It's just a couple of rockets.
Just a couple of rockets. No, I mean, C-Rams get them. And so anyway, the howitzers go off, and this person is in a bunker. And I'll try to keep this story streamlined, but this person's in a bunker. There's outgoing. There's a lot of other things that people will hear in the story and be like, oh my God, there was accountability issues. Yes, I agree. There's a bunch of other stuff. So this person's in the bunker, stayed in there for hours afterwards. This person legitimately thought that we were getting overrun. We'd been hit with a V-bed on the exterior wall just a few months prior. Nastiness, people almost, insurgents almost got in. They did get inside the first layer, and they almost got in the second layer. That's in their head. They had seen that and heard about that before they came to our location. They're at our location. Here they're outgoing. Don't know it's outgoing. Even though it was on the loudspeaker, they just didn't hear it. Could they usually call it to let people know? Anyway, he's in there hours thinking that he's dead. He's going to die. You know, just the end is near. So later, we end up sending that person, get them treatment there, local, or we move them to Bagram, get them treatment to Bagram, and then get them out of country, back home and additional care. No physical injuries suffered, but mental and psychological. Later, we were in another location. At that location, another building, and somebody was more seasoned, had been a couple of rockets, no big deal kind of thing, just like I just said, had a hard time understanding why this person, quote, and they'll use their terms, freaked out.
Yeah.
Something you said there reminded me of that, because I pulled that person aside. I let everybody in the audience, in the area, know, like, hey, that's not right. That's not what we do. Everybody processes things differently. I pulled them aside and I said, look, just because you can be okay with a couple of rockets coming in and some outgoing, doesn't mean that everybody else is. Even though there wasn't any real danger to that person at that particular location on the grid, that's what they perceived it. So something you said there, I think, is vitally important. I tell that story to kind of frame it for me, in my mind, the combat nature is, no matter what somebody's going through, it's important. And what they've been through is important. So many times, or sometimes, I should say sometimes, I think people discredit other people's stories and they don't give them that space to say, hey, I went through something that wasn't right, because they're comparing it to whatever they went through or whatever their friends went through and said, hey, well, you know what? Nobody came through the wire and shot at us. It was outgoing, man. Deal with it. It's your dog. Your dog died. Deal with it. It wasn't a person. Those types of comments are so damaging. So what you hit on there about, hey, trauma isn't always blood and gore, right? There's trauma is so many different levels. Something else that you talked about earlier on in our previous conversations, I wanted to bring out just a little bit, is learning to check in emotionally and having people that we can actually check in with. What does that mean? And what would be some real practical advice that you would provide to who I say about putting people in your circle? You can term it however you want to, but how do we check in emotionally, and what kind of people do we need in our lives, or would you recommend having in our lives to be able to share what we've been through?
Yeah. So, you know, checking in emotionally, it's actually something that I see. It's an issue across the board. Like I see, you know, stay-at-home moms who are overwhelmed and are doing all of the things who deal with, you know, not being able to recognize they need to check in. I see, you know, people like, you know, you're describing about the person that's like, oh, whatever, it's just a couple rockets. Well, that person may totally be fine with that, but they also may be dissociating. They also may be compartmentalizing it and putting it in a box because they just can't. They cannot look at it. They cannot deal with it. They've got to keep moving forward. So often we get in that go mode and we just like are on autopilot. I've got to get this done. I've got to be strong. You know, sometimes we don't feel like we have people in our lives that, you know, we can be vulnerable with, you know? And so, you know, developing relationships with, you know, close friends, if you can, and if not, you know, talking to pastors, talking to counselors, you know, finding people that are going to be able to hear you and validate, you know, what's going on with you, because sometimes it takes a minute to break through that exterior for you to realize, okay, how am I even really feeling right now? You know, I've had a client who she's a doctor and she's experienced, you know, she came to counseling because she lost a patient and it was just the straw that broke the camel's back. It wasn't the first patient she lost, but it's like it hit her all at once because she had been doing this job for so many years. And she had experienced these losses and just compartmentalized them. And she pushed them to the side and, you know, I've got to keep moving. This is part of my job. I got to keep moving. And then all of a sudden it just, bam, it hit her. And that's what happens a lot of the times when we try to dissociate from those feelings, when we're stressed, when we're angry, when we're hurting and we don't acknowledge that, it's not going anywhere. Your body is going to manifest it if your brain doesn't right away. Like you're going to feel tightness in your shoulders or your back. You're going to feel some physical pain sometimes that's just chronic and there's no explanation for it. You might get headaches. You might not sleep well. And then the emotional side of things, you may be irritable. You may lash out at people for no reason. You know, you may, you know, feel like you're going crazy. I think that's one that I've heard quite a bit. I just felt like I'm going crazy. I don't know what's wrong because it's just become so much at that point that the pot's about to boil over. And so it's really important when you are noticing, hey, there's a lot of stress in my life. I need to sit down and check in with myself. And sometimes all that looks like is sitting in the quiet without your phone, without, you know, all of these distractions and just kind of being like, how do I feel about what just happened? You know, let's say you have a moment where you got really irritable and you lost your temper on your spouse or you lost your temper on your kids or something like that. Take a step away from that because I don't know anybody that doesn't bother them when that happens, right? Oh man, I shouldn't have been so hard on them. You know, I feel bad. Take a step away from it. Go spend some time by yourself for a minute after that happens and say, okay, what's going on with me right now? Why am I so irritable? Why did that just push me over the edge like it did? And sometimes that's what checking in looks like. It's just really sitting and kind of thinking, what am I really feeling right now? What is going on with me? And if you start to kind of unpack that, then you can deal with things one at a time. Okay, I know I haven't really been taking care of myself. I've been focusing. I've been, you know, just jobbing it so hard that I've, you know, been trying to give everybody else what they need, but I haven't been doing anything for myself to help me, you know, decompress at the end of those stressful days. You know, I'm losing sleep. I'm not eating my meals like I should be. I'm not taking care of myself. Those are things that are all part of that checking in process and why it's really important that you need to do that. And that can be very difficult for people, especially people who grew up with caregivers who didn't encourage you to express how you felt. I have two boys and I have made it my mission to talk about feelings with them because so many men specifically, men very much so, I don't know, it's interesting how society has done this, but you know, the belief is that, you know, it's not manly to be emotional. It's not manly to have emotions. It's not manly to cry. You shouldn't feel this way. You shouldn't act that way. You got to be strong all the time. And that's just not true. It's not feasible. Yeah. Like, it's, you know, you can't, like, you're a human, you have emotions as well. And so, you know, even men need to learn how to put that into words and how to get it out when they need to, because if they don't, it's going to impact them in more ways than they even realize. And so, you know, that's something that you kind of have to realize as well, especially men who are seeking therapy and how it's very difficult for them to access that. There's a reason. And that's because it's really just decades long society that says, well, you got to be the man, you know? Well, sometimes to be the man you need to be, it's going to take you being able to deal with your stuff in a healthy way so that you can fully be there, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. I tell you, I've had a conversation, and we'll definitely leave them nameless. If they're listening to this, they'll know who they are because it'll ring true for them. I've had conversation with people like that. One of the hardest, probably the hardest thing I had to do is admit that I needed to talk to somebody. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been shot at, I've been half blown up, I've been running convoys, all these other things that were easy. I know it sounds mm-hmm. crazy, but they were easy for me to process, at least at the time, to get through. Like you said, go mission, go, mm-hmm. And take care of those that were with you. But to actually admit that there was something, because, you know, I think a lot of it had to do with a physical standpoint, like the enemy's not strong enough to get me, the enemy's not fast enough, you know, all these types of things that were taught. And it's got its good points in it, right? Because you need people to be confident in their abilities. But on the other side of that, when asking for help, that is so hard, because to your point, society, as a society, as a culture, for lack of a better phrase, we that's bred into us in a way, right? Especially in a profession of arms, no matter the gender, just so happens that the majority of the gender are males in the military. But, you know, so you're right. That's very hard. And I tell people, a couple of people I talked to, I said, this is going to be the most courageous thing you've ever done. You're not going to feel that way. You're not going to feel that way until you start going through it. And there was something else you'd mentioned earlier about that's some of the most freeing things, is once you realize the thing that you didn't have control over. And me and you were chatting a little bit before we started recording, when we admit that, right? Like, hey, I need help. This is something I can't battle. I can't do it on my own, or I can battle it, but I can't do it on my own. I can't win this war on my own. That is so freeing. So I just want to speak to the hearts of anybody that's listening right now to really take your advice, number one. But number two is stop for just a second, just pause. And you got to want it for yourself. That's something I realized too for me. I had to want it for myself, for my family, so I could be a better husband and a better father, which in turn made me a better airman. So you got to want it, and you got to be courageous enough to look in the mirror and admit that there might be some psychological scars, some emotional scars in there. Something I tell people, you know, you got to be prez in the present, psychologically ready and emotionally steady. But the only way to get there is to face it, right? And so anyway, thank you for providing your thoughts on that. I know I could talk to you for hours on this, but before we let you go, I wanted you to hit one more topic for us, because I think it's vitally important. So we've talked about understanding, you know, where those scars come from and how they can form, at least through childhood. There's other ways, but we just address that particular one, and then how to kind of recognize that and walking through that. But talk to us just a little bit briefly, if you can, about the healing process. I know you've kind of alluded to it in a couple of other comments that you've made, but what are some of the misnomers on that? I know you mentioned it directly earlier, but just reaffirm that for us, of like what that looks like. What does healing look like? And some, I know there's a lot of different things that we could cover in that, but I guess maybe the major points that our team should know, our audience should know about what healing looks like and what it's not.
Sure. Yeah. Well, one thing I like to say is that there is no magic wand, right? So even if you go to therapy, even if you do all the hard work, you know, healing is lifelong. And that was a lesson I had to learn myself, like in my own journey, is, you know, that you're not really ever 100%. I'm completely over that. You know, it's totally fine now. I don't have any issues. You know, it's lifelong, and it's that awareness. I know I keep bringing that up, but that's because that is what it's going to take. Once you recognize, okay, what happened to me was trauma. It was not okay. It affected me and it impacted me in ways that I didn't realize before, right? There are going to be situations that trigger that. And when those situations trigger that, I know that I have a tendency to go into fight or flight, or I have a tendency to believe this, or to view it this way, to see it through this cracked lens. But because I'm doing this work, because I've done this work and I've learned how to challenge that, I'm going to have to actively do the work of redirecting, right? you're going to have to consciously deal with it sometimes. And it's going to come up. A lot of the times you'll see it come up in your conflict situations, dealing with confrontation, dealing with marital conflict. That's one reason why that's a huge thing. You see so many marriages that end because of communication issues, especially in the military. Like, oh my goodness, that's already a super stressful, you know, way of life in a lot of ways. And, you know, when you've got trauma on one or both sides that's not being dealt with, you know, it's going to impact. And even if you have dealt with it, again, the healing process takes, I mean, it's your whole life, right? You always have to be aware of it. You may still have moments where you get so caught up in life and so busy that you're not realizing how stressed you are. And these things are starting to build up again. And then all of a sudden, you know, you get really irritable or you snap at someone. And, you know, we go through these phases of life where it's harder sometimes than it is at others. And you may be more likely to be triggered by things and you may fall back into those old patterns of thinking. And so when you can catch yourself and remember those tools that you learned to challenge those thoughts, to, you know, reframe situations, to take a step back and really look at your perception of the thing that's happening. Am I looking at this with a clear lens, or am I looking at this through that lens of that false belief that I have about myself or other people, you know? But yeah, I mean, the self-concept, how do I feel about myself? Like, you know, realizing that you may have a tendency to have more of a negative self-concept, questioning your ability, questioning your competence when it comes to work, when it comes to being a husband, being a wife, being a mom, being a dad, those things, those are all things you're going to notice that as you're going through phases of life, it can continue to kind of rear its head. Those little beliefs that you've pushed down and you've dealt with, they may still kind of knock at the door a little bit. And so I think the biggest thing to realize is just that there's no like complete 100%, like I don't ever struggle with this anymore. Like life is hard and we hit rough patches and we may hit more trauma, you know what I mean? And yeah, it's not black and white. It's not easy. It's not simple. It's something that we have to take as it comes. But continuously checking in with ourselves, continuously trying to evaluate if we're looking at something the right way with a clear lens. How can I best respond to this in a healthy way? Why is this bothering me so much? Let me go figure that out before I address the situation, because sometimes that's a big thing, you know? So there's a lot of like, you know, continued growth that happens after you start to, you know, heal and go to therapy or whatever that looks like for you, whether it's, you know, through church that you really are able to achieve that first real, you know, dose of healing, or however that looks. But just knowing that that's going to be a continued process that you're going to have to refer back to, and you're going to have to continuously check in with yourself so that you don't fall back into those old patterns.
Yeah, that is spot on, Jen. I don't want to stereotype all males, but I will say a couple of things. And for the longest time, and this could apply to any gender, but, you know, because guys aren't the only ones that lift weights or fish or hunt or anything like that. But, you know, you said it earlier, it does seem to be, at least in my experiences, right, that it has affected more males than it has females, just again, in my experiences. And somebody told me one time, one of the pastors, Pastor Rick Barnett, I'll give him a shout out, the greatest man, that one of the greatest men I've ever met. He always say, it's a matter of the heart, Caleb, it's a matter of the heart. I love that saying about from him. But anyway, he said, you know, it's one of those things, it feels good when you make the right decision. And I was like, feels good. And then it started happening, right, where you say, hey, pause a little bit. Am I actually looking at this through my old cracked windshield kind of thing and taking some ownership? And that feels good. And the best way I'd put that to people that might be from the warrior culture, if you will, when you hit the target 95% of the time, that, you know, in the bullseye, that feels good. You know, you got your M4, whatever you got, that feels good. Your PR, you hit a PR on a weightlifting, that feels good. You know, and that's the same way for me. I feel when I make those decisions, we'll spend hours. Jen, we spend hours, a lot of people, guy friends that I have, on workout techniques or hunting techniques or fishing techniques. We don't spend almost zero time on mental techniques.
Yeah. Right?
And dealing with trauma and dealing with scars, but it's the same. I'm not a doctor by any means. I'm not licensed as you know, but sometimes I think it's almost like an endorphin release. Like when I'm running, they call it a runner's high. You know, that's the type of feeling I get. And I just want to give, you know, that as something for people in the audience to think about is when I experience making those decisions, you know, you take a step back and be like, how much do I own in this process? How much am I creating the conflict here? Is it something I've gone through in the past that's speaking now versus what I should be? I feel the same way. I feel like it's a sense of accomplishment. You're like, hey, you know what? I was grown up right there. I did grown up things. You know what I mean? Hashtag adulting. Right. So anyway, thank you so much for the advice you've given us. This on the real talk at the end of it, Jen, at the heart of it is about leaving a legacy, leaving a great legacy. And it's about trying to help people understand more about themselves and all the topics that we discuss, how to be better humans, how to lead better, how to take care of people better. So in that vein, if you will, and I'll give you the last word, basically when you say whatever the last word is, I'll say, and we out. What do you hope your legacy will be? What is Jen's legacy on this world?
Well, honestly, I feel like I grew up always knowing that I wanted to help people, and I didn't really know what capacity. I didn't know what that would look like. And I feel like God really kind of steered, not kind of, he did. He definitely steered my path. I remember being an airman. I was about 25, and I remember this staff sergeant. I remember her name and everything. I can't find her on social media, or I would tell her what she did, how she impacted my life. But I remember her saying, she overheard me talking to somebody who was going through a hard time. And she said, have you ever thought about being a counselor? And it had never crossed my mind. And when she said that, it's like the light bulb just switched on. And then I was just on this path, and God just confirmed it every step of the way. And I feel like he's given me a passion for this, you know, both because of my personal experiences and my need to understand mental illness and understand abuse cycles and, you know, how they impact generations and, you know, how to stop them, basically. And this passion is there for a reason. And so, you know, just feeling like if I can impact even one person's life, if I can, you know, speak truth to one person who is able to grow in some way, is able to realize, hey, healing is possible for me. It wasn't okay what happened. And I see how it's affecting the way that I look at myself, the way that I look at the people that I love. And I want to be different. I want to end that cycle. That's what I want. I read a quote recently that said something about how one person can change the world, because if you end an abusive cycle with one person, that's going to change every generation after that. You know what I mean? And it's just like exponential, the amount of impact that that has. And it's just amazing to see people who are so brave and who are willing to go and face their ugly stuff from childhood, the things that broke them, that hurt them the most, to face those things head on, to do the work that needs to be done so that they can be better and they can be different and they can impact the generations that come after them. I love that. And I want, you know, that's the legacy that I'm trying to have in my own family as a mom. My children will never know what it is like to live in a place where they're not sure how, you know, if they're loved, or they're worried about being taken care of, or, you know, things like that. And hopefully they're going to grow up and be amazing dads to their own children. So yeah, I mean, I guess really, if I had to like summarize it, I hope that my legacy will be not only, you know, breaking the cycle in my own family and for generations to come, but walking with other people as they work to break their own cycles as well. You know, I hope to write, I hope to speak truth into people as I continue my career, teaching hopefully eventually. And I hope that really ultimately what it'll help is to stop cycles of abuse, you know, to create new generations that don't know that type of pain, I guess. And they don't carry that with them forever.
That's amazing, Jen. Thank you so much for being on with us today and sharing your wisdom. Dr. Van Pelt was in the house today. Y'all heard her here first. Never forget, her first podcast was in the early days of her being working on her doctorate with Real Talk with Kayla. But anyway, thank you so much, Jen. We appreciate you. We love you. Thanks for doing the hashtag real work out there. We out here. Y'all know the deal. Till we talk again, keep it real.